This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Come with me on a journey into the mind, into the misunderstood and mysterious world of neurodiversity, into a place of daring discovery and desperate darkness, but also, you know, fun. Come with me if you dare, into the universe.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Into the Neuroverse. It's me. It's Colin Holt. It's that Colin guy. Colin Holt. I feel much better saying my own name now. It's taken me a long time to do that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But if you've never heard this show, it's me. It's Colin Holt. I've discovered I'm neurodiverse, definitely diagnosed as a ADHD, sort of discovering if I'm autistic. Having a lot of fun with it, taking over my life, I won't lie, but I'm enjoying it because when you have these discoveries, especially if you're in your 40s, it blows your mind and you realize there's a whole universe that you've just avoided or never really entered. And I guess that's what the Neuroverse is. We're going to be chatting in a bit to Ethan Lawrence, who you might know from Afterlife, which I was in. I was Ken Otley, who was like a pretty vile theater dude director. And Ethan played James, who was sort of my client slash sort of sex object, I think. Didn't really look too much into that because I didn't really want to, if I'm honest. But it was certainly hindered. That's a lot of fun. He's a lovely guy. But first, I'm just going to catch up with my dear friend. It's not Jamie, if you listen to this. Normally, my friend Jamie Firth is on here. Jamie's not available, but instead, I've got my friend Dan Snellgrove. Snellgrove Guinness. Say hello, yes. Dan.
Hello there. Sorry, yes, I'm an imposter here, walking in Jamie's shoes.
Very good. What a pair of shoes. What a smelly old pair of shoes to fill. But what a Dan's very good at taking on roles. He's an actor. That's a terrible. But what Dan, you might know. If you follow my work over the years, and I know a few of you have, you might know him. Well, you will know him from quite a lot of things that we did together, didn't we, Dan? He was in Carnival of Monsters, my show. He was Late Dan, who a lot of people still remember as a big thing. Do you remember that? This is how good Dan is as an actor. He came in. I'll explain it quick, Dan. I was playing a character called Len Parker. Dan comes in as an audience member. I'm like, why are you late, mate? Why are you late? And he goes, oh, sorry. So I'm like, oh, it don't matter. Why are you going on about it? Why are you late? I'm not bothered. Why are you late? You know, and it was really awkward. And eventually I get him out onto stage. And my character's a karate instructor. He's very bad at it. I get Dan out. I say, do you know karate? He says, yes. And then he sort of does a move on me. He kicks me in the head, doesn't actually kick me in the head, and I freak out and start going, fuck off. It's still one of my favourite things I've ever done.
It was so exciting for me to do, because like beforehand, because that happened like was it like the fourth scene or something? So
fourth scene
in the
fourth
show.
Scene, yeah. So it was a multi-character show. By that I mean it was all me playing different characters. With Dan, Steve and Zoe were sort of in it as sort of within those scenes and doing different things, music and sort of being bodies in scenes and then sometimes being characters in scenes and stuff.
But of course we were in it for those first three scenes. And then I left the stage, had to run round the hut because we were in the hut, weren't we? I had to run round the hut and then come in as an audience member. So beforehand, in the previous scenes, I had a mask on so they couldn't see my face. And then I had to run around.
Yeah, we had those kind of those blank face masks, didn't we, like that you can get, which were really cool and eerie. Yeah, very spooky.
And it was always so exciting to come in and have to be like, I just hope they don't somehow recognize me, you know, somehow. I know I had a
Daniel, so good. You're like a real actor. You're like, I feel like I'm just like doing a show for my mum always. I mean, and it's very telling I said my mum there, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm putting on a little like, look, I'm wearing a funny hat. I'm doing a funny voice. It's funny, isn't it? You know, I feel like that's, well, whereas I feel like funny. you take it super serious, don't you? That
well, that's
kind of
it.
Thing, but you're always like very, do you remember we did it once? We only did it about three times outside of like Edinburgh and you know, the Soho and stuff, as in a normal gig.
Yeah.
And I think one time you wouldn't meet me beforehand because you couldn't.
Oh,
so you didn't, but I totally admire that. Like, you didn't want to break the illusion. You totally played it like, if anyone sees us together, then it's fucked. Which you're absolutely right. But in my mind, I guess it was almost like the whole thing's kind of an act, a play. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, but you were absolutely right. You know, you were making it so it's more like a magic show almost for you.
Well, I mean, so maybe this is quite, in some ways, maybe appropriate for the Neuroverse show in what mind state you need to get yourself into in order to do these weird things in a performing. And you know, it goes back to the two actors who were, what was the one about the running the marathon and, who was it? Was it, oh, I can't remember now.
Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman.
Exactly.
Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman, that one.
Yes, that's the one where one of them had to.
Like, oh no, that was on Barrack Man. That's where he goes, "Have you tried acting, darling?"
Exactly. So I always felt
where Dustin Hoffman was running every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I always got the feeling that one day you were going to turn around and say that to me. rather than having to like go through this process of like avoiding you, pretending to be one of the crowd as we were going in, just getting my partly for my mind to be in the right place, but also I really was desperate for them not to see any possible cracks in the illusion, for sure.
I think I'd really, that's why I never do things like prank shows and stuff, because I think I'd just crack straight away, or I'd somehow give it away. Or like The Traitors, we've got Paul from The Traitors is going to come on this show.
What? No way.
He said he will. We'll see it when it happens, but I think hopefully it will be in a week or so. But I'm just obsessed with that idea that you can just, I mean, I do lie in life. I know how to, like, we all like, do you know what I mean? It's not like a foreign concept to me, but that idea of sort of like, do you know what? It reminds me of my mate. One of my best things I did early on as an actor, like as an actor, when I was like 16, I was played Mark Antony in the, Antony and Cleopatra. And it was a really, you know, I really sort of, I think I did a very good job. I mean, if I saw myself now as like a 16-year-old boy trying to be like this Roman emperor, it'd probably look very funny. But my mate Sam came to see it, but he was a bit late. And I'd like done the first scene. And in the theatre, it was like you had seats going back and then, obviously you have seats. But like, you know, what's it called? Like a raised seats. And then there was like an aisle on either side. It's a very simple thing I'm trying to explain it. But you had to come down the aisle to get to the seats.
Yeah.
So, but also the aisle, because it was only like, you know, a youth theatre thing, the aisles were also where the actors were going on and off.
Right.
Very long explanation to say that Sam was coming in as an audience member, a bit late, like you, late Dan.
Yeah.
And that as I was exiting my first scene as Mark Antony, and I was fully into this thing, you know, Mark Antony, and I saw him come the other day, I just went, "Oh, Sam, how are you doing?" And he was really like, he was like angry at me that I'd, do you know what I mean? That I broke character immediately. Which then gets me into all sorts of, as an actor, spirals where I'm like, I'm not a real actor, you know. But I think I've come up to peace with it. Because I have tried, you know, I have been in things where I've like, when I was drama school, like burning my hand in this.
Oh my goodness.
Candle. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like this character, all I knew of life was pain. That was my first line, all I know of life is pain. Yeah. And I used to be in this, they had a trapdoor and I'd start in this trapdoor and come out through the ground. It was really cool as this kind of, he was the prince. but he'd been locked away from birth because his king had been, his father, the king, had been told that he was going to kill him. Prophecy type thing. Yeah, it was amazing. So he was like this feral animal. Well, that's the way I played it. I was thinking about it, but I was thinking, I think I just put that on it. I'm not sure if any of that was, but I did remember like burning my hand a bit, you know, trying to be a bit methody and stuff. And the thing is, I'll do that for a bit and then just forget that I'm meant to be doing it. Do you know what I mean? Like, just get bored or just, well, I mean, I don't get bored of burning my hand, but I do. Oh, ow. No, it's like I was trying to make myself feel pain to try and get the real feeling of pain when I came out.
Oh, gosh.
Very drama school thing to do, if you know what I mean. But
I don't think I've ever done that. So you anyway, are still.
We've talked about acting.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's Dan. But you, yeah, but just fully immerse yourself and stuff. It's very good, that. And yeah, Dan, since then, he was in Enemy of the World and Inferno, my other shows. And he's been on the radio series of it with me. And exciting news. I'm going to announce it here. Dan and Jamie are going to be joining me on a new podcast, which is a horrifically nerdy thing of mine, where I'm making them read comic books so that we can then discuss them. It's called A Bomb to Zax. And we've done the first episode. It's going to be where we go through every single Marvel character on the Marvel Unlimited app.
Like a surgical analysis of
surgical analysis. Dan and Jamie both don't really know anything beyond the movies. And Dan, you don't even know much of that.
No.
So it's fun though. But that first one, I was really like, this is going to be awful. I feel so sick. I feel like this is my whole autism being like put on someone's head, like a big teat, like I've taken out my autistic teat and flopped it on your beautiful heads. And I'm going, have that. But it went very different to how I expected. It was a lot of fun. Just felt very fun.
It did. And I mean, like, it was fun for me to delve into to this world that I know you are so deeply into and just sort of,
yeah,
you know, have a little look. And I mean, the first guy, A-Bomb, you know.
Yeah, A-Bomb is the first character on the list. No.
We have a nice chat about him.
But we go on all sorts of chats. We end up talking about gamma rays and other fun things, whether armadillos are cuddly. We sort of talked about cuddly, whether he looked cuddly or not. Yes. And then we give them a rating out of 10. Anyway, so listen up for that, dear listeners. And on that note, please go, if you want to support that show, this show, or the Anna Mann show, more of which are also coming soon, please go to patreon.com/Colin Holt and you can sign up there and pay a little bit every month, or you can just pay once and then cancel it. Some people do that. People were doing that quite a bit and I was like, oh no, they hate me. And I was like, oh no, they're just doing that thing where they pay and then come off. That's fine.
Yeah.
So on that note, I think it's time to go into the Neuroverse. And as I've been doing with Jamie recently, it's time for This Week in My Neuroverse.
This Week in My Neuroverse. This Week in My Neuroverse.
Okay. That was some music there, which thanks to Daniel Eyes on Legs. I'm not sure if Eyes on Legs is his real name. Daniel is his superhero name. I imagine it's the other way around. So, Dan.
Yes.
Not other Daniel. So this week in my Neuroverse, it's been an up and down week, I won't lie. Uh-huh. So I did, do you know what? I there's loads I could talk about, but in a nutshell, what I'm going to talk about that confused me this week. So what I like to do with Jamie is talk about a thing that's kind of got me in a way that I think is a neurodiverse way, and a right. neurotypical person would probably not bother or would have, you know, coping mechanisms. And this hasten to add two things. One, this isn't say that being neurodiverse is wrong and right. that I'm not trying to fix myself in a sort of like I am wrong way. It's just giving you different ideas and thoughts and so on, you know, which I think is very helpful because the world is the way it is until it changes for us neurodiverse people. We have to, you know. Anyway, what happened was, the second thing I want to say is I'm totally unqualified and do not want to other than my own personal experience, I don't know what I'm talking about. So please take it with an absolute fucking bowl full of salt. Just eat loads of salt before listening to this.
That's not medical advice, is it?
Yeah, so what happened what? That's not medical advice. That is not medical advice. So what happened? So All right. There's a few things I could talk about, but this is only meant to be 15 minutes. We've already done 15 minutes. So anyway, the thing I want to talk about is I was doing gigs out in Birmingham, right? And I end up spending a lot of time on my own because that's what happens. And I forgot about this. And I ended up going a bit mad. Now, Dan, you lived on your own for a long time. You had your own place and seemed pretty happy with that, I think. We'll get into that in a sec.
Okay, yeah.
What I ended up doing was wandering around Birmingham, which I was having a really jolly time, right? And then I ended up in a bit of a weird conversation with someone which threw me. And I think it was someone who's kind of made me feel a bit like I'd done something wrong. And because I felt like I'd done something wrong, as in I'd got something wrong. Do you know what I mean? A lot of the time with being neurodiverse, I think you're always feeling like if someone, especially if the, when they sort of, they said it in a very vague, I realize I'm doing it now, but said it in a very vague, as in not really explaining it way, just made me feel a bit guilty about something.
Okay. Yeah.
and I wasn't sure what it was or why. So I just spent all day ruminating on it and going madder and madder and madder. I liked the other acts I was with, but we weren't necessarily people who would hang out. Do you know what I mean? And no offense to those guys. I just, you know, we weren't really the, you know, we didn't end up doing that for whatever reason. Anyway, I ended up, the first gig I did was fun. I did Thursday, Friday, Saturday. First gig was fun. Second gig, I'd got into such a bloody state. I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. Everyone, and I was wearing this suit that I've got, that I've been wearing, which is, looks great. But I felt like, there was a moment where I caught myself in the mirror and I felt like, I just feel like such a twat. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, no.
Like I'm like, hello, I'm doing a funny show. Kind of like a sort of, it just all spiraled and spiraled. Anyway, I ended up finding in Birmingham this place called the Custard Factory, which I'll come back to that at the end as my tip, actually. That's my tip for the end. That's my tip for the end. But my point is, what I ended up doing, Dan, was going, I had like loads of work I wanted to do, loads of things I could do, loads of a few things I needed to do, right? And I ended up just spending the day going from cafe to cafe, having more and more coffee, which obviously that's not great. And then writing, I ended up writing this thing, which I really liked about autism. And as I say, I'm still self-diagnosed at the minute, but I ended up just taking a photo of it and putting it on social media, on Instagram, which lots of people responded to nicely. But I thought, why did I do that? I've ended up since taking it down, not out of shame. Partly it's because I've got an acting job and I don't mention the job, but I say at one point in it, oh, I'm doing an acting job next week with a famous actress. Oh God, how am I even going to do that? Because I could barely function. Do you know what I mean? And I thought, probably take that down. I mean, it's unlikely they'll listen to this podcast, so don't worry. Not that it was an attack on the famous actress. It was just sort of like, oh, you know, it was just a general panic spiral. And as I put in the piece, in fact, I've got it here on my phone because I took a photo of it. I thought it was a perfectly good piece. And I thought it was nice to show. And a lot of people said, oh, thank you for sharing that and all this stuff. But then I kind of felt like a bit weird. Do you know what I mean? I just felt like I'd overshared and all sorts of stuff like that. And I thought, oh, is that a bit weird to me to put that? Anyway, so what I did find, Dan, I'm reminding myself, is this is exciting. There is a pandemic-style game called Reign of Cthulhu.
Right.
That's exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting. I'm sorry.
That's entirely... Sorry. So anyway, what I ended up talking about essentially was... Sorry. I said, I'll just read you the first bit. I put, as an autistic man, I find most of my work is in trying to understand other people. By work, I just mean like, you know, just most of my day is spent trying to work out the people, what they want, what they're trying to express. When paranoia hold them, I think they mean me harm or not. Do they hate me? I've inherited a powerful instinct from my mum that people just don't like us inherently. And then I say the noise. Sometimes I just freeze in a street. I don't know which way to go or who to be, who to put on in order to navigate the next hour, especially in an unfamiliar place. I'm so nervous about seeing other people. And then it goes on from there. But I basically put, I'm so tired of finding life really hard. I don't mean hard work, graft. I like that. When I've done a hard day's work, but the horrible sensation of not knowing how to navigate daily life and people, it's exhausting. People always say, be yourself. I have no idea where he is. But then I end on a high note of, I think the answer is in curiosity, ultimately, being curious, not scared. So yeah, I ended up just putting that out. It's a funny one, isn't it?
Wow.
Right. Well,
it obviously had to come out of you.
What am I asking you, Dan? I thought so. Do you ever have these moments, and how do you cope with being alone? But also anything else you thought off the back of that?
Well,
massive amount of information.
I mean, the thing that came to mind is probably immediately was my oversharing during lockdown, which, and I don't want to brand what you've said as oversharing because, as I said, it clearly needed to come out and you had no outlet at that time. We live in a time where we are arguably more connected in some ways. We could be connected, in inverted commas, at all times through our phones. In some ways it's kind of isolating, but you had some way of expressing this thing, and you did. And we have conversations in life where we say something to somebody and then go through that cycle of, oh, I shouldn't have said anything, and you know, the crashing waves of shame come over us. But the alternative is to keep that locked inside, isn't it? Keep it in. And who knows what would have happened going down that path. You let it out. I think that's probably more healthy, to let stuff out, you know. But anyway, if you're literally sat with somebody and you're opening up, you get a feedback loop of their expressions, their responses, all that kind of thing, and you go on a bit of a journey together. But if you're firing that out, you put it out there on a social media source, and then nothing, you're back to sat in that cafe or wherever you are, all you've got are your own like doubts about, oh, should I have done that, you know. So I don't know. I still think you've got to let this stuff out in some way. And also what you are doing is there might be some people out there who read that and go, yeah, I connect with that. I feel that. They might not feel brave enough to respond to you or to those people that are posting that sort of stuff, but it may have done some good. People read that stuff.
I hope so. I think I'm still in this early stages of like, defining myself by, well, I don't want to define myself by it as such, but I kind of am defining myself by it. I guess I've found a cause, but I find causes quite terrifying. You know, like I'd love to be at all these protests and stuff that are happening at the minute, but I think there's part of me is just like, oh, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, oh, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. And it's like so obvious. Yeah, get involved, dude. Get involved. But I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
but maybe that's a scary story.
To put a counterpoint on it, I think sometimes people only see a situation through a particular lens and therefore will protest for that particular cause with no effort into looking at the grey is purely just black and white. So I do myself also not tend to perhaps protest, for example. Mm. And there are things in the world where you just go, actually, yes, obviously that needs defending.
Yeah.
And I think you have found something that is like, yes, we need to shine more of a light on neurodiversity. We need to discuss it, but it needs to be something that can be spoken about, posted about. Everyone needs to reach across to each other.
Yeah.
Understanding. So, this is a worthy cause.
It's a worthy cause. Lovely. Thanks, Dan. Well, anyway, that was my week in the Neuroverse. And thank you, Dan, for your thoughts on it.
You're very welcome.
This week in the Neuroverse. This week in the Neuroverse.
First, here's our very special guest, Ethan Lawrence, as we go into the brain boardroom for a little bit of Sort Your Brain Out, Mate.
Into the Neuroverse presents
Sort Your Brain Out. Baby, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. And let the sun shine in. Sort your brain out. Lady, sort your brain out. It's crazy, sort your brain out. Don't let the bad guys win. Sort your brain out, mate.
Lovely to see you, mate.
And how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm not too bad. Trying to sort of make ends meet at the minute. You know, it's all a bit.
That's true.
A bit grim out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough. It's not not the
lot of doing this podcast is just I want to just check in that no one else is getting more work than me.
Oh, no, don't worry here. I think this is month 13 of no acting work.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, it's so mad, isn't it?
It's dreadful.
In my head, I feel like I'm being an absolute arsehole to my agent just constantly. But because I've got two kids, I've got to. I'm just like, what else can I do? You know? I mean, I do stand up for that reason. But yeah. Are you working on other things other than?
It's like little adverts here and there, little radio stuff.
Has you got enough to tick you? Yeah.
I'm still alive, just.
But you've done quite a lot recently, haven't you, buddy? Like,
it's all stuff that I finished in 2022 that's now sort of coming out.
Right, that's it, isn't it?
So it gives the illusion that I'm busy.
And I forget this, even though I'm an actor and have acted for ages. I think the same things.
It's just so funny, isn't it? It's like, oh, you've got Horrible Histories coming out and Boat Story. You must be doing great. And it's like, no.
I know. But I'm thinking the same stuff. And I'm like, oh, Ethan. So not that I'm furious about it, Ethan, you understand. But I'm like, you know, not that I'm very happy for you. But I'm like, God, Ethan, you know, you go on anything. Like, oh, he's always on stuff. God, he's always, she's a constantly bloody way. And then some fuckers are.
Yeah, I've seen that.
You know, when you're in a read through for something and someone's like talking to someone, like, did you go up for the blah, 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 or whatever? And they're like, you know, oh, yeah, just finished working on with blah, 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 you know. And shut up.
Good for you, mate. Good for you.
Just be happy you're here.
And we're alive.
Unless it's the one point in your life where you've got two things going on and then you're like, then you're constantly banging on about it, you know.
That was November, December 2022 for me.
Oh, what?
Blinging what a couple of months between London and Leeds. And being like, oh, it's so good to be busy, but I'm ever so tired.
Oh, God, I just need a rest, to be honest. You say stuff like that, don't you? God, I could just do with a bloody break.
Oh, what's that old phrase? How'd you piss off an actor, give him some work?
It's so bad. Oh, we're awful. We're awful. I'm going to eat a banana on that bombshell.
Bombshell.
I've just been chatting to Nick Helm for a while. But I'm very excited to chat to you, my darling.
That's Sally boy. I tell you, this is creepy, right? This is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last podcasts I did was called Guestimators, and the guest that was on before me, Nick Helm.
That's so weird.
I'm just following in Nick Helm's footsteps at the minute.
What's Guestimators about?
So Andy Bush from Absolute Radio.
Yes, yeah.
They've set up a sort of a poll group called the Guestination. They ask some weird questions. And they get a guest in and we have to try and sort of guess where they're at.
In where they're at in life or where they're at?
Where they are with regards to the questions they've been asked. So, like, the ones I had were, you've been commissioned by the Royal Mint to get rid of one coin. Which one do you pick? And then we had to then work out which one they went for the most, the least, the middle.
Which one did you pick?
Well, I thought people would want to get rid of the penny.
Is this a bit like Family Fortunes?
It's a little bit. Little bit.
Oh, okay.
Little bit. It's got its DNA of it.
With lovely Les Dennis. Did you do stuff with Les Dennis and Ricky?
No, never.
Because I've done three shows with Ricky Gervais, obviously, and they sort of blur. I can't remember who was in what sometimes. And sometimes I sort of remember being, especially as in at least two of them, I was essentially playing the same character. Ben and Brian.
That helps for keeping track.
It helps. Sorry, which, well, to be honest, generally as an actor, I do have two characters, which is sort of posh and camp. or sort of rough Nottingham bloke. And it's like, which one am I playing? Posh and Camp. Okay, thank you.
You want Nottingham today. Wonderful.
And is that rough Posh and Camp? North Posh? Do you know what I mean?
All the different pieces together.
Yeah, yeah. You can have Nottingham and Posh, Camp and Rough. That was Ken. Ken was Camp and Rough, I guess.
Ken was Camp and Rough.
Rough as a fucking boss. Oh my God. Well, that sounds really fun, though, guesstimations.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good laugh. And like the questions they ask are so bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, another one that I had was, which planet do you think would have the hardest army?
Which planet?
Yeah.
I mean, the assumption's Mars, right?
Yeah, that's what I went for, and you would have been correct.
But that's pure. It's funny because Mars doesn't know any of that, does it?
No, of course not. It's just,
if
it's
planets
just
know anything, you know, but
it's never been known.
There might be a sort of brain within a planet, I think.
Well, we can't prove there isn't right now.
Well, maybe the whole ecosystem is a brain. It works in much the same way.
Maybe you're a brain. You ever considered that?
I'm not sure if that's an insult.
Well, isn't it good to be a brain, no? Smart.
You're a brain, mate.
Easy.
All right, back off.
When you say it like that, yeah.
How was the podcast? Yeah, it was all right. Then he called me a brain. I was like, what's going on with this guy? Yeah, well, Mars, yeah. Does it know it's war-based? Or is it like, actually, I'm quite gentle. I'm a pacifist.
It's quite
just because I'm red.
Actually.
Just because that bloke wrote that bit of music. It's like, now I'm the bad guy.
Oh, evil Mars.
And as we know, like, when you know, if you put into people's heads that they are the bad guy, like with kids, you know, if you're the naughty kid, then you become the naughty kid, don't you?
Yeah.
So Mars has probably become this warlike.
Mars must have been so upset listening to that podcast.
Oh, fucking hell. Because it goes through space and eventually it hits Mars. Science.
Well, you know, I don't know how Wi-Fi is on Mars, but you never know.
It comes and goes.
It's spotty. I would describe it as spotty. You wouldn't want spotty. To have a Zoom meeting
not perfect.
From there.
It's not perfect, but it's all right. It's all right. Lovely. Well, thank you for coming here today, Ethan, and chatting to me. I haven't seen you for ages, have I?
It has been a long, long time.
We met on Afterlife. Is that where we met?
Yes. Yes.
Les Dennis, of course.
This was series two. It would have been 2019, I think.
Were you in series one? I think you were in series one, weren't you?
For about 90 seconds, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny how Ricky really, like, he really takes a shine to the odd. Do you know what I mean? You never know.
Oh, for sure.
You never know if he's going to grab you or not. I got me, because that sounds wrong. I don't mean grab you in that way. It's all coming out. It's all coming out.
This is so the part
Ricky,
now.
Ricky never grabbed any of us. I wasn't in the first series, and I've got to admit, when I found out they were doing it, because I've been in two of his things, there was a very, you know, I like a lot of neurodiverse people and a lot of people, and a lot of actors, I suffer from rejection sensitivity disorder.
Yes.
That was a tough one, I think I processed it pretty quickly and pretty well, you know.
And it seems he had a plan anyway.
Well, and then he brought me in. Yeah.
Yeah, because
we ran out of ideas and he just said, I'll get that guy to come in and
get halted again.
One. Yeah.
But no, like, because that 90-second bit, it was not only me, but also Joe Hartley.
Right.
And I sort of feel like if you've got Joe Hartley, you got to use Joe Hartley, right?
Yeah.
Because she's so extraordinary.
She brings so much as well, doesn't she? She brings so much, like, she'll take what is, a gag character, and really initially wasn't it, and then just literally, because he has in between the sort of main scenes those what are gags of him and Tony Way going around doing the reporting and stuff, and it was one of those, wasn't it? I think
literally that I jammed some recorders up my nose and Joe Hartley was proud.
But the way like both of you, but you know, the way Joe is the character called Joan. God, my memory's so bad.
I genuinely can't remember what it
sounds bad, but I genuinely I think a lot of people get slightly offended by this, but I rarely watch the stuff I've been in. Do you?
I watch it once to see how it's turned out.
Yeah, same here.
And then after that, I can't watch it again. I can't do it.
But like when people go, oh, I love that bit where he said that, and you're like, did I?
When did I say that? That does sound funny.
Well,
when
people
I said
just
that.
Say the things. Oh yeah, no, I'm quite good, aren't I?
I'm actually quite talented, weirdly enough.
It's real. I did have this moment. I did a Anna Mann on Harry Hill's show years ago, and I was in the makeup truck on something else. Maybe it was Afterlife, and they were like, "Oh, what's this Anna Mann thing you do?" And I was like, "Ah!" And then they found it online, and were watching it on their phone. And it was a really weird moment. I was just stood behind the makeup people.
That's really strange. I wouldn't want to do that.
They were good friends. You know, they weren't like being like, let's have a look. You know, they were very, but they were laughing so much. And it made me feel so good.
He actually really needed it in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. It was really helpful.
So I've actually just looked up what Joe Hartley's character's name was.
Yeah.
You were so close. It was June.
June. That's so bad. It's worse for you, mate, because she was your mum in it.
Oh, but I've had so many mums over my career, Colin. I can't keep track of all the mums.
I was updating my Spotlight, which for any non-actors listening, I think there's a couple out there. Spotlight is where you pay to sort of put your face out on a website, don't you?
It's like an advertising
block. It's an
advertising. For a billboard.
Yeah. I was going through it and someone was going, I think my agent was going, let's put your character on from thingy, because I hadn't updated it for about 2 years, you know. It's like an action that would take about under half an hour and could change my career. And I hadn't done it.
Won't bother with that.
Hadn't put some of the biggest things I've been in on there yet. Hadn't quite got around to that, you know. But yeah, and I just had no idea what my character was called in this thing. And it was quite a big thing. I was like, oh, could have been Dave, could have been Ian.
Thank God for IMDb, right? And those nerds that are keeping track of everything.
But you know, when you start out, you never think you're going to end up at this place, do you? Where you think you're going to like Ian McKellen, you know, I played Iago and you're literally like trying to remember the name of a character.
I wonder if it wasn't even
like a walking part on the bill or something, walk on part in the bill. You know, it's like a main role I've done.
I wonder if it's a TV versus theatre thing.
What, with theatre,
with a TV show, like, you do the scene and then it's done. Like, it's kind of ephemeral. It's almost throwaway.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're doing a theatre show, then presumably there'd be a fair run of it. And so Ian McKellen remembers Iago because he was doing it for 6 months.
Yes, you know, I guess
same steps over and over
and over
again.
That's why, weirdly, even though I've been an actor for 20 years now and done, you know, my fair share of stuff, but I still, like, when I think about acting, I think about either the stuff I'm doing on stage now, which is more stand-up comedy and stuff, or I think about stuff I did as, like, when I was in youth theatre and that. Because you actually put time into it.
I remember all my amateur musical theatre days. I remember how intense it all felt.
Yeah, I still sing Guys and Dolls to myself and sort of thing.
It's humming under your breath.
Yeah, and I'm sort of like, you know, I didn't even have a proper part in that. I was only in it for about 5 minutes.
I've got to tell you this story. I think you'll like this. We did West Side Story with the youth group I was with, Essex Group. Shout out Gary and Anne Sullivan.
Yeah.
And we did West Side Story, and the guy playing Riff, because I was a Jet, of course.
Yeah.
And the guy playing Riff.
Is Riff a Jet? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He's like King Jet.
I don't remember it enough, but yeah, go on.
He's like the leader of the Jets. He's the big dog. But the guy who played him couldn't click his fingers.
Okay.
Which, like, for West Side Story is like a really big problem. So, like,
it literally starts with them clicking their fingers, doesn't it?
Yeah. But during the song Cool, he's sort of like leading it. So he's walking around like having to click his fingers. I had to be his click stand-in. I was like standing at the back of the stage just with my hand behind my back, just clicking every time he clicks.
And were you having to click for yourself and him at the same time?
Oh, yeah. Good job. I could do both, really.
So you... But hang on. Why do you need to be clicking for him? Because if you're clicking anyway, how is the audience differentiating between his click and...
This was the bit where he was just clicking on his own, but I did have to do both occasionally.
I don't know West Side Story enough. That it's like a click solo.
Well, he's singing... the Cool song is him just singing on his own. Yeah. And so he's just going around like, just play it cool, boy. Real cool. He can't click. So... We're all standing around. He's like swanning around the stage doing the clicks and everything like that. And I'm just standing at the back, literally hands behind my back, just like, Every time.
The real hero in that situation, you know. And I bet
I'm a utility glory, player, isn't it? In many ways, a utility team player.
You're just a facility. You're just helping. You're passing the ball so that he can score the goal.
Absolutely. No one's ever going to talk about me being the best footballer in the world, right? But
oh no! But
they'll look back at my career and they'll go, "Do you know what? He got a lot of assists, and that's good."
He was clicking a lot. We need a clicker. Do you know what? Actually, I feel like I could probably say this now, not to to keep talking about Ricky and that, but I think it's quite a funny thing. When I did, when we did Life's Too Short, and in the read through, and Liam Neeson couldn't make the read through, so Ricky got me to read in for Liam Neeson, which is very exciting. And I just discovered I could do quite a good Liam Neeson impression. You know, that kind of, someone's just talking at that kind of level, you know. That's everything's really kind of there. That's quite good, isn't it? You know,
I love finding out accidentally that you can do an impression.
Oh, it was so fun. It goes back, sadly, to the movie Krull. You're quite a bit younger than me, but the movie Krull, it came out in the 80s. It was like a poor man Star Wars, but absolutely amazing. Poor man, I don't like that phrase, poor man Star Wars. I take that back. It was better than Star Wars, right? In many ways.
Star Wars, it was like, had a dream.
It was, sorry?
It was a Star Wars with a dream.
With a dream?
Yeah, because Star Wars had already been and gone. But now here's this young upstart trying to take the throne. I love that.
Yeah, the new Krull. Yeah. Yeah, out the way, Luke Skywalker. The problem was the lead was very forgettable. Very forgettable. And his name sounded like Colin. And Colin wasn't a very popular name in the 1980s in Nottingham. This was before the Firth and the Farrell. In the dark days.
The Firth and the Farrell.
And I'm opening a pub actually called the Firth and the Farrell.
Great epoch.
Days of the Firth and the Farrell. When you could be Colin again, but back then you could not be Colin. And the hero's name was coming like Colum. It was like a made-up fantasy name, like almost Colin, like Corum, but not Colum as in the cool Irish name. Like Corum. But he had like a spinning... I did this with Nick Helm. We ended up chatting for like 20 minutes. And the whole concept that I'm trying to do, we haven't got to yet, but we will in about 20 seconds. Anyway, he used to throw this thing and blades came out of it. Anyway, you don't need to know that. But Liam Neeson's in it as a kind of pirate. I think it's his first role. And he's kind of a baddie. Him and the guy whose name I can never remember. It's like Alan Alda. He's the guy who was in New Tricks.
Oh, Alan Armstrong?
Yes. And can never remember. I met him once and I said, "Oh, I love you from Krull." And he was like, he was very gracious, but there was a like, okay, mate, you know.
Krull. Of all the things I've done.
He probably can't remember his character's name in it. Like, I can't remember
It was something like Colin, I think.
Yeah, Wiley, right? Alan Armstrong in it has like a dog collar. But okay. It's just like a real bondage dog collar.
Oh, but right.
He just looks like Alan Armstrong in this, with a big axe and a sort of, it's really weird. Because they've tried to sort of fan, it's an amazing film, Ethan. I suggest everyone. Anyway, Liam Neeson's in it. He's Alan's best mate. He gets killed. And he's like a baddie, but he sort of becomes a goodie, you know. And when he dies, it's a very moving moment. And he like goes, "My traveling days are over, my friend." And it's a really beautiful moment. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, Ricky got me to
slip into Neeson. I'm transfixed.
That's good, isn't it? My traveling days. It's just there.
It's really good.
Well, after that, because it was fortuitous that I did that read through, that Liam was off, I think, filming Batman. The third one, because he's in it briefly. Yeah. Anyway, and they all find it hilarious that I could do it. And then they got, Ricky and Stephen got me to do it. So then he was like, literally did the job, which is very funny if you've seen it.
Yeah.
And he was in, you know, where he does the whole, where he's doing like an improvisation and he like goes.
I can't believe that you dropped into it. It's
He plays this character and it's meant to be like an improvisation with a doctor and like and Ricky's like being the doctor. He's like, "So what's wrong?" And he's like, "I have AIDS." And it's like really, it's very like, but it's very funny because he can't get that. Do you know what I mean? Maybe start with something a bit lesser or, you know, he can't, yeah. the gag is that he's trying to do comedy and he keeps making it drama, and he can't help but make it really heavy and serious. There's a great bit where he goes, "I want to do stand-up comedy. What are you, crazy characters?" But anyway, it was a lot of fun doing that. But then he was between jobs, and so he needed someone. And this isn't in any way suggesting Liam Neeson is a bad actor, because obviously he's not. And in the end, he didn't need it anyway. But because he was literally flying from one job, doing this, flying out again, he just needed someone in case his lines went
right
in his ear. But it wasn't like I was feeding him lines or anything. It was just in case, because he was literally jumping between jobs, you know.
And for the people listening at home, it's really hard to remember a lot of words.
Yeah. And he had like 5 pages of essentially monologue, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'll get in trouble for revealing that. But anyway, I was like in this booth talking to him. And but then they got me to do it. And then,
because did your Neeson to Neeson.
To do it. And I was like, yeah, of course, you know. But then I was like, hang on, why have you, I've never actually asked Ricky this, but have you done that because you want me to do his voice back at him? I don't think they thought it through at all. So I'm in this tiny sort of box in the corner of the set in a microphone. But like, and he's like, hello, Colin. You know what I mean? And I'm like, should I be like, hello, Liam? You know?
I thought for a second that genuinely was the reason. It struck me just then that they wanted you to do Neeson to Neeson.
It feels like a prank, doesn't it? It feels like, oh my God, but what a man. What a man. Yeah, absolutely.
It's gotta be weird, right? Being like just famous enough that loads of people do your voice.
Do loads of people do his voice?
I feel like he's famous enough now that everyone's got a, like, they know the Taken speech, don't they?
Getting some quite bad rejection sensitivity, because I think it's only me that can really do his voice.
Yours is amazing.
Thank you. Amazing. Oh, yeah, a lot of people
Some people try it.
Find you. Yeah. I will. And all that stuff, yeah.
But, like, say you're Michael Caine.
All that stuff, innit?
Yeah. So, but say you're like Michael Caine, and everyone's got a Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be weird. How many times do you think someone's done a Michael Caine to Michael Caine?
Is it horrendous, do you think?
It's got to be weird, right?
What about when did Tom Hiddleston do an impression of De Niro to De Niro, didn't he? Oh, have you seen it?
Was this on Graham Norton?
Yeah, I couldn't watch it. It came on, I had to go upstairs and like hide. I had to like hide under the bed, I think, because I couldn't bear the idea.
It's mortifying, isn't it? Because I don't know how, I don't think we've spoken about this. Do you get like recognised often?
Not as much as I'd like. do you know what? I'm in the in-between. I do get recognised sometimes. That's nice. People come up, and mainly from Afterlife and Derek, I think. But then sometimes, and Ghosts and Being Humans. There's quite a few bits of Bob's, you know, but sometimes I do get that thing where they're just, someone's just staring at me and not saying anything.
Yeah, the double take.
And that's really like, but they sort of don't stop staring. You're like, are they about to hit me? Or have they, and you sort of think, oh, they must know me from something.
You got to think to yourself that, haven't you?
And they're probably having, like, I would probably have that, because if I see someone famous, I'm not the kind of person who goes up and goes, even though I am an actor, you know, who goes up and just confidently says, hey, I love your work or whatever. But yeah, sorry. Anyway, what's your question? Sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was transfixed by you.
I know.
How do you find, like, if someone does come up to you and says, like, you know, they enjoy your work or whatever, how do you feel internally when that happens?
I guess I have a challenge where part of me is like, oh wow, great, lovely, thank you, you know. But then also part of me is like, shut up, Colin, don't get too excited.
You're very conscious of yourself.
Yes. I get kind of, sometimes, well, I mean, I guess this is part of my whole neurodiverse thing, is like, this can be a nice segue into the whole point you've been here in a second, but the idea that I don't really know how I'm meant to be. So right. I start thinking, am I going on too much? Do you know what I mean? do I now look like I'm one of those? Oh, yes. Well, thank you. Well, you might know me from blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes after gigs, I chat to people who have watched the show and stuff. And then I think, oh, what am I doing? I'm like hanging around. Do you know? I don't mean as in, oh, I'm better than them. But this is a bit breaking the illusion. Do you know what I mean?
I get you. But then I suppose there's a part of me that, like, because I'm similar to you in that I sort of don't want to play up too much, and I also don't want to play down, because I'm very conscious that this, I could make someone's week here.
Right.
Like, you know, not to sound too arrogant or too fine a point on it, but this is going to be an anecdote that they're going to dine out on for a couple of days.
Oh man, I don't really think about that.
So, like, you know,
maybe should.
Because they enjoy your work, right? You know, they enjoyed watching you in Afterlife or Derek or whatever it may be. And they want to express that to you. So you want to send them away having had a good experience, I always think.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to think about it. Do you know what? This may be saying a lot, but I think I have so much sort of self-doubt, whatever, that I just think, oh, they probably don't mean it. That's sad, isn't it? I think if I've done a show and they've been in the audience to come up to me and stuff or whatever. You know, my favorite one of all time was, I was walking down the street in Brighton, and this guy who looked very cool and very funky had like red hair, red dreadlocks.
Oh, sick.
He wasn't a white guy, so he wasn't, maybe wouldn't look quite so cool. But he looked almost like Will I Am or something. Do you know what I mean? He looked like a kind of fashion icon. He's really stuck in my mind, hasn't he? Anyway,
he's a very richly drawn character, this guy.
I'm now aware he very much sounds like I may have imagined him. But I think he was flying.
He was on a rocket surfboard, I think.
He had like flames coming off his finger. But he saw me turn around, like clicked his fingers. This bit, probably I'm making up now. But he pointed at me and just went, "And a man, oh my God, one of the funniest things I've ever seen." And without a beat, I just sort of went, "Thanks, man," and then carried on walking.
You're just trying to sort of matchy swagger, really, I guess.
You what, sorry?
You're trying to sort of matchy swagger.
Yeah, but it was...
Like if someone comes in with such powerful energy, you've got to be like...
Oh. He was very confident in himself, whereas I guess often people come up to you and they're not very confident in themselves.
Yeah,
in the same way, I probably would be going up to someone who I find very famous, or I'm a bit like, hey, off the telly.
But that's the thing, you said to yourself, you wouldn't do it.
No. The other thing is, I have been around people. Like, I remember being with Russell Howard, I was with him when he was starting to become famous in Edinburgh, and we were at a bar or whatever, and there was this really pissed person was like staring at him like, "I know you, don't I?" And it was really sinister, but they didn't know. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes people are like, "I don't actually know who you are or what you do. I think I've seen you in something." And that weirdly can feel to me, I don't know whether it's a neurodiverse thing. You know, I'm trying to unpick what is a neurodiverse thing, what isn't, because I find generally, now I know I'm neurodiverse, generally in life, I'm like, oh yeah, I've always found the whole world weird and terrifying, and I don't quite get it and why people are behaving the way they're behaving. So stuff like that is really like alarm bells ringing, you know, because you're just like, what do they want? Why are they staring at me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a weird feeling.
The worst one is when someone comes up who has been put up to it, mm-hmm. comes up and comes over, "My friend says you're famous." Because you're sort of like, right, how do I play this? Because I feel like I need to justify myself now. Because, like, yeah, I'm not the one who brought this up, but I sort of feel like I now have to go a bit, I guess. I don't know. I've done some telly stuff. And it's like,
Do you want to be someone who just goes, in a way, I think, fuck it, when you say that, because maybe we should just be a person who goes, yeah, I am, actually. Why not, in a way?
I can't be that person.
I know. But we've spent all these years working to get to this point where we're at. And it's not like we're, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or anything, but we're, you know, we've got some achievements under our belt. And really, like I say, like literally putting things on the spot, like, I can't remember the name of the character I played. And in a way, maybe we're coming at it wrong and we should just be loving that we're like, yeah, this is great. This is what I always wanted, you know?
I wonder if it's a comedy thing as well.
Right.
Because
with comedians, people can be a bit more
I wonder because
I am listening to you. I have to just send something as I'm listening to you. I've just remembered. Sorry.
No worries. I'll keep prattling on. You know, one of the things about comedy, I suppose. I mean, like, you know, I'm not a stand-up comedian anymore, but I'm still, you know, deeply in the whole comedy acting space, and it makes me think sometimes.
You used to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, 100 million years ago.
You have told me that. Sorry, you have told me that before.
Yeah, never got anywhere with it. But like this sort of the validation of a laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sort of need to be liked, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which I suppose with dramatic actors, you maybe don't get as much. Like people, like your Liam Neeson's, for example.
Yeah.
Like, does he think about making sure someone's had a good experience when they come up and say hi to him?
I mean, in that case, he was doing comedy, wasn't he? Do you know what? He just felt like a living statue. And I don't mean one of those shit things you get on the pier.
Put some money in his bucket.
I mean, he walked into the room. I mean, you want him to be your dad or your big brother or yourself, don't you really? He's just, I don't know what it is. It's just an air of calm, considered. I went up to him and I went, "Hello, Liam." And like, "Hello, Liam, it's Colin," you know. And I like knocked his glass. He was holding his glasses and I knocked them out of his hand, you know. And he just sort of like froze for a moment. And I just picked them up and gave them back to him. And he didn't really say anything, but it wasn't in any way like, it didn't feel like he was being like, "Oh my God, you're not my glass." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just complete, like anything, nothing would faze him is what it felt like. I mean, I'm sure stuff does faze him and bother him, but it felt like he's his own man. He's approaching every situation as it comes at him.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So two stories I've got,
yeah,
sort of similar. With
we haven't gone into the boardroom yet, but we will.
We'll get there. Meeting the ultra famous, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been lucky enough in my career to have worked both with Nicole Kidman and Channing Tatum.
Wow!
And in both cases, one less so, maybe about one and a half, they were the ones who introduced themselves.
Yeah.
And I found that.
Yeah, I find that generally people are like that. Are they?
Possibly, but like you were saying earlier about good sort people. Of the kind of aura around Neeson.
Yeah,
there's a certain aura around Nicole Kidman and Channing Tatum as well. When you're sort of like, I am in the presence of greatness now, and I don't know if that's we're putting that on them or if they genuinely do project A-list. But they were both so friendly and nice. Like the Channing Tatum one, I somehow, don't ask. I somehow got into a Magic Mike film, right? So I'm there.
Is it XL?
No, this was the most recent one, The Last Dance. Oh, but I'm playing like a stage manager. And so I'm in for my first day. It's a couple of weeks into the shoot. Yeah. I'm in the makeup trailer. Funnily enough, makeup designer was Fran from Afterlife.
Oh.
Yeah,
saw it the other day, actually, yeah.
So when I came in and I was like, "Oh my God, what are you doing here?" It was wonderful. Yeah. But But I'm sat down.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. Actually, she told me last time I saw her that she's worked a lot with old Channing Tatum.
Old Channing Tatum.
The old man Channing Tatum. Well, he must be pushing 70 now. Still got it. Still dancing.
Still got it. Still got the bod. But yeah, so I'm getting my makeup done. And then I see in the mirror behind me, in walks Channing Tatum. And immediately I'm sort of like, right, play it cool. Everything's going to be fine. He comes up. I mean, he comes up. He holds out his hand. It's like, hi, I'm Chan.
Right.
And I was like, oh, Chan. Oh, how you doing, mate? Nice to meet you.
Chan.
Chan.
That's how he refers to himself. Because Channing's, you know, I hate my name Colin. I try to say to people, Col. Oh, hi, I'm Col. And they, yeah. Everyone goes, Col. What? And they go, all right, Colin.
Like a few.
Nick, Colin then.
Conda.
They go, Greg. No, but...
Not listening to
you. Jan, that's lovely. And he gave you a handshake.
Yeah. And like, it's he, as like I said, he fully introduced himself. Now, I'm sure part of that is because he was a producer on this.
Mm.
And so, like, you know, he has a responsibility to know who people are and to poke them at their ease. But I always feel like he didn't have to do that at all.
No. I feel like Channing, or Chan, sorry, has maybe had to work his way up quite a lot and prove quite a lot.
That's it.
You know what I mean? Because I still, if I'm honest, I, even though I know and I've seen him in stuff as an actor, and he's been great, I still kind of see him as, in my head, he's like a martial arts guy or something. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he started out literally.
He's not though, is he?
No, he started out as a stripper.
Right.
Like the Magic Mike essentially is him.
That is his story.
But then he was doing all the dancing and stuff, which got him into stuff like Step Up and things like that, where he's like, you know, full on dancing. Then Magic Mike broke big and suddenly it's like, oh, here he is. But like, you know, he struggled, and but he made it.
So is there a thing where people, so I find myself like, I'll often just lose all my poise, confidence and all that stuff, and find myself like talking myself into almost like trying to get help off people in a situation. Do you know what I mean? As in, which is kind of this podcast, but as in like, do you know what I mean? Suddenly I'll go down a few avenues and before I know it, I'm like, so I might as well just give up, hadn't I? Should I? Something like that.
No, I feel you. I
guess he's oversharing, but it's like, how do you, they obviously don't go to that place, or maybe they have places they can do that. I mean, obviously you've got therapy, which I now do, which is very helpful for it. Yeah. I've got you.
I've
got Liam. Well, what I do have is the boardroom, which we'll take you into in 1 second, Ethan. But what was your, do you think that's it? Do you think it's that they?
Well, I always think to myself, like, it's, I don't know. It's tough because I feel like we're all human, right?
Mm.
And like, even though Liam Neeson and Nicole Kidman have this sort of energy when they walk in where it's like, I am a person of importance, which I don't, again, I feel like I may be putting on them. I don't think they're doing that.
Mm.
But I, you got to think one time they've had like a dodgy prawn and had like a rough night on the bog.
Yeah.
And yeah, you have to think that they suffer from the same problems we do.
But well, they do, yeah.
We just don't see it. So I'm sure, especially maybe in the early days, I'm sure Channing Chan had those long, dark nights of the soul as he was sort of like, is this going to be my life? Am I just going to be a male stripper for the rest of my life? And then suddenly luck comes a calling. But I mean, even, you know, on our level, like, you know, it's a sequence of lucky breaks often that keep us in work, keep us employed and keep our families fed and watered.
And when you look at the amount of the things where you've worked so hard at and made almost nothing from it, or, you know, and then the things where you've hardly done any work and made a huge amount, it's completely random, isn't it? It's like,
it doesn't,
you hope the work will win out in the end, but it's, yeah. But so
I had the highest paying jobs I've ever had were adverts.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Which are like, you know, they're fine. They're good to do. They're fun often. Yeah. But they're not artistically stretching you in any way.
I found, I find adverts really hard because it's very specific, isn't it?
Oh, you've got to be
Oh, it's horrific. Even on those Checker Trade ones I did, which were a bit more like, yeah, you know, fun and I'm improvising, but just like, I couldn't get the lines in my head or anything. Do you know what I mean? Because it was so, the minutiae of it.
I think doing Horrible Histories helped with that for me.
Right.
Because again, that's even though that seems very fun and very sort of off the cuff and everything like that, you have to get the history right. And so
can't start making some shit up about Cleopatra.
No, absolutely not. Otherwise, the CBBC bosses will be on you like a rash.
I love the idea there's just this like really evil like history. You know, if it was like a Pixar movie or something and there'd be like the history checker. Just like marking you off. Yeah.
Well, I make something up about Charles the First.
So that's quite good. So what, just the terror of getting it wrong, then you learn your lines.
Less so the terror, more so I guess I'm just used to minutia, as he called it. I'm used to sort of like the little bits and memorizing those now. I think, I don't know about yourself, but like when it comes to learning lines, often when people say to me, like, oh, I don't know how you do it, my response is generally, it's a skill set. You know, I've been doing this since school. I've been learning lines for 20 years now. I'd hope I'd be good at it now.
And there is this thing that just clicks in, isn't there? Where like in the past, the past is a thing I often can't remember, is what I'm trying to say. As in, I often don't remember what I did last week or whatever, but I can just look at lines and they do. I mean, it's not literally, I look at them and they've gone in, but it's almost that quick nowadays.
It's sort of feeling it's that way, isn't it?
Yeah, you just have to say them a few times and you find your way. And there are tricks and stuff, but ultimately you've just done it a million times, haven't you?
Yeah, it's a skill, same as anything. Like, you get better at something the more you do it.
Yeah.
And so I guess with, you know, if you were to have like a run of adverts, like you'd spent a whole year doing like an advert a month, say, I reckon by the end of that, you'd be right across the minutia.
Of adverts.
Yeah. You'd be right.
I think probably part of me is like, I don't really want to be doing an advert.
Oh, for sure.
What's going on in my brain?
I'm not wishing on you.
I'm refusing to learn this. My brain's going, no!
I push back against this.
Give us some Shakespeare, we'll learn it all. I can do Ian McKellen as well. Well, that's not actually very good. Hang on. No, let's not do that. We'll bring him another time. So anyway, in my boardroom,
yes,
Ethan, which I'm going to invite you into briefly now, I thought the last one with Nick Helm, we only got about 10 minutes and I thought we would do all right on this. We've got 5 minutes in the boardroom, which is the whole point of this section. Anyway.
This show is meant to be helpful.
I know, this show is meant to be helpful for people with neurodiversity or people who are just struggling with bits and bobs. I know you've had mental health hiccups, would you say?
There's been times when I've been low.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
But I think it's a mark of this industry, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I don't need to tell you about how often rejection can happen in this industry.
Yeah.
Like, for God's sake, you're the last person I need to tell about that. But, you know, for the people listening at home, it's tough out there, man.
Yeah. You're constantly trying to convince yourself, I can do this, it is a job. I am right.
Yeah. And like,
I have a right to do this and all that shit. Yeah.
It took me so long to finally reach a point where in my brain, I was happy for me to say, do you know what? I'm a really fucking good actor.
That's lovely, Ethan.
It took me so long to get there.
I'm not sure I can say that to myself, you know.
I hope
can you actually say that?
I hope that one day you'll let yourself do that. Because you are. You're incredible.
I think I still feel like it's a trick. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm just making everyone laugh by dicking around and saying that stuff.
Even if it's a trick, it's a trick you're doing very well.
Yeah.
Like that takes skill. That takes talent. Like, you know, everything a magician does is a trick, but it's something that they've worked hard at and they've learned to make it perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did do a job recently where I was in, it was a drama and I haven't done that much drama. I've been in loads of like live comedy for so long. And it was a proper scene and just playing out the scene. Like, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, and I was nervous I wouldn't be able to get it back again. That feeling of just, we're just here. It's just happening. And we've just got to let it happen. As opposed to kind of like, I've got to make everyone in this room laugh. It's just like, no, we're just being a scene and the cameras are there and we don't. Do you know what I mean?
I had the exact same thing.
And then I react like this, and I might react in a way that goes like this, or it might go like that, you know, but either way, it doesn't matter, as long as the scene is played. Oh,
I'm so glad you said that, because, I had a very similar experience. mm-hmm. when I did Boat Story for the BBC, I have a scene with Craig Fairbrass.
Right.
And it's a really, really intense scene.
Is he the big tough guy?
Yeah, yeah. The Rise of the Foot Soldier.
In like all the sort of Butch Soldier type films.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. So oh, he's terrifying.
Yeah, he's over 6 foot. And in this scene, we're in a caravan and he's pointing a shotgun at me. And like, we're having this kind of really like tense negotiation thing going on and just talking to each other. And I felt exactly the way you felt, how you described this then, where everything just melted away. And I was like, it's me and you. It's me and you, buddy.
Oh, it's wonderful, like, isn't it?
And he's so good. He is so good at what he does. And
did you get on all right with him? Was he right?
Because he's, as you can imagine, because he's a big, scary lad. He's an absolute teddy bear.
Really?
Yeah, he's such a champ. I love him.
Oh, lovely. I always build up like, oh, that person would hate me. Do you know what I mean? God, all my neuroses are coming out today, aren't they? Jesus Christ. But so what? Anyway.
Your way at you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's great. It's what they want. So this show is to try and help people who have... Oh, that's how we got diverted, didn't we? Mental health hiccups or whatever.
And then we went back into more celebrity gossip.
And it's just become celebrity gossip. I have a boardroom in my head that I go to sometimes. I don't know why it's a boardroom. I'm not a very officey person. I tempt a couple of times. In the boardroom is a long table with some people sat around it. Those people are people I love, admire, respect, or interest in. Just, I'd love to hear their opinion on a stuff. As I navigate this neurotypical world as a neurodiverse person, I often think, was I doing the right thing there? Should I have said that? Should I have done that? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to deal with this. So Barack Obama...
I'm sorry, who'd you say you were?
...is normally the guy at the clipboard, and he's just kind of like, come on in, Colin, you know. I'm doing Liam Neeson's voice because I can't actually do Barack Obama.
I'm Barack Obama.
Imagine Barack Obama, but it's Liam. Liam Neeson, I don't think he's in that room, and I need to get him in there.
I don't know who you are.
Anyway, he's there and he writes the prop, whatever the problem is. And then there's people like, people like from the X-Men are there. Storm, not Halle Berry, I'm afraid, you know, because bless her. the real Storm, the Storm from the comics. Different people, you know, my late dad's there with his just looking a bit embarrassed to be there, to be honest.
Oh, with Storm and my best Obama, mate, it's Paul. A big day.
You what, sorry?
With Storm and Barack Obama also in the room, it's a big day.
Well, you'd be quite like, why am I here? You know? And I just get their thoughts, you know, on things. I don't do it as much as I used to. I used to do it all the time, and it was so good. So one of the things I find in life, right, and this maybe makes me sound like an absolute psychopath, I'm aware of this. Oh, by the way, did you want to bring anyone else into the boardroom with you? Or is there anyone you would bring?
It seems pretty packed already. I'm just happy to be here.
Lazy answer, isn't it? But that's fine.
All right.
No, I'm joking.
I'll tell you what, for you, I'll bring Liam Neeson in.
Liam Neeson. Oh, Colin, so this is your boardroom. I have a similar thing myself. That's how I did so good at acting.
Oh, yeah, the boardroom. Of course he does.
That's how he's got the boardroom. He's
of
got,
course Neeson has a boardroom.
I think eventually if you do the boardroom enough, life becomes your boardroom, is my thinking.
That's beautiful.
Okay, thanks. Life becomes your boardroom. But anyway, so he's... Thank you, Liam. Thank you. Barack Obama's ready to start. He's written up on the board there, Ethan, a question to throw to the group and to you. How do you remain a nice person? Is the question. I think you are a nice person. I'm sure you are a nice person. Okay, so there's a few things to throw at you, first of all. I think I grew up in a world and environment where being nice wasn't really considered. People would say, oh, you got to be nice to people and all that, but no one really meant it. And actually, I think it was quite harsh in many ways, and there was a lot of undermining and picking on people. And one of the reasons it made me think of it with you is, and sorry to put you on the spot with this, but we obviously did Afterlife together and we had scenes together, and a lot of those scenes were me being quite horrific to you, you know, and about you, and saying, you know, oh, while you're there just being like, oh, la, la, you know, and sometimes there is this point where I'm like, does this feel mean? Does this feel, obviously we're acting, yeah. You're an actor, you're in the scene with me and all that stuff. But I often get myself into a point where I just don't know. I think I'm much better at it now, but I definitely, when I was a teenager and early 20s and stuff, and comedy didn't necessarily help stop this, where I feel like I was just not being pleasant. And weirdly, often people think I'm nice. They go, oh, you're really nice. You know, but I don't, I feel like I'm, my wife's been very good at getting this out of me, you know, because she very much doesn't have a side to her. Do you know what I mean? She will just, she doesn't see why anyone would ever pick on anyone. Or why everyone would ever be mean to anyone. She doesn't understand it, which is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fundamentally decent person.
Yeah, I feel like your response to most stuff in life is very nice and is kind and caring. I know when we first met, I think, not, you don't have to go into a doozy, but I think you were having to do dominoes at the time, were you?
Dominoes? Yeah, that was...
acting jobs?
Basically, the old career had fallen apart.
Which was not fun for you, I assume, but...
It was all right. Like, you know, I don't want to sort of dress up the idea of it being sort of like this kind of catastrophe. I enjoyed the camaraderie of the delivery driving.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing, isn't it, actually, is sometimes when you have to stop, it's quite lovely, because doing what we do is incredibly lonely, because actually it's just you bigging yourself up all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, and in this case, I was, you know, working 5-6 days a week, and I was part of a team. There was an atmosphere, and, like, you know, I made myself indispensable, and then I quit to go and do my silly dress-up games again.
I read the Tom Baker autobiography. I think it's called Who on Earth is Tom Baker? And there's only a tiny bit about Doctor Who, because I think he loves it again now, but then when he wrote that, he hated it. But he talks about how he's on the building site with and he was doing this job, and his career, similar place to where you were, and he was working on the building site, such camaraderie. And then I got Doctor Who, and we went out for drinks, and we had an amazing night together. And they said, well done, Tom, you will come back. And he goes, don't you worry, I'll see you. I'll be here next week. I'll be back. Don't you worry. And I never saw any of them again. It's one of the most wonderful books I've ever read in my life.
I'm literally, the second we get off this Zoom, I'm going to go grab it.
So good. But anyway, my thing to you is, genuinely, and I'm still, so I have a diagnosis of ADHD. I am still determining if I'm autistic. I know I am, but, you know, yeah. I still feel a bit. As I say in my stand-up, I self-diagnose as autistic, but I also self-diagnose as a wonderful lover. So, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. But I genuinely think I struggle. I've had to learn where the line is, which I guess everyone has anyway. I don't think I'm an immoral person, as I think I do know on some level right and wrong. But I feel like I don't understand. And I felt like with Ken as a character, for example, I could have, because obviously there was improvisation around it and stuff, could have just kept being awful. So I was thought of a particular awful time I was remembering then, which was where, should I say it? Okay, fine. But it's where, when I was on a show with this guy, a few of us, and it was very JP and bantery and jolly and fun. But he was older than us. I mean, I was 30 at the time. And he was 42. Now I'm 45. So I'm really like, fuck, you know, or nearly 45. But he said, he was like dicking about. And I did this thing, which was unbelievably mean, but I just thought was hilarious in a character, we're all being characters way. And I started going, what are you doing, mate? You're 42. You shouldn't be doing that. I was like, you should, I remember saying, you should have a family now. Why are you doing this? What are you doing? And he was like going, ha, ha, ha. And like, I was just like, that was funny, wasn't it? And like, just kept pushing it. And then afterwards, my mates were like, fucking hell, why were you doing that? What? And I was like, what? And he's like, why were you doing that 42 thing to him? He kept saying, like, that was so awful. How could you do that? And I was like, oh, but it was just joking, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? And I've carried it with me. But funnily enough, I don't think he was that bothered. But they were so, and they were people who were like, people who say much worse stuff than I have, you know, in terms of those moments.
For sure.
Sorry, it's very long-winded. I'm not just talking about banter as such, because banter isn't... I don't really like the whole banter world, if I'm honest, but how do you know when you're being not nice, I guess, is what I'm saying. Are you aware of it, or do you just approach every situation I don't know. What are your... Do you have any thoughts?
It's sort of a levels thing, isn't it? Because I wouldn't act that way with someone I wasn't super familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I feel like if someone's like a close friend, I feel like I'm well within my rights to bust their balls about anything.
Right.
But because I know they'd do the same to me. And like, let's be honest, I'm absolutely a target. Because like, you know, I'm the highfalutin, well-to-do actor running around. And like, most of my mates are not.
Oh, really?
So right. If I ever get too big for my britches, it'll be sort of like, all right, easy, Olivier.
Right, okay.
Yeah, all right, bad education. So that's, yeah, that keeps me grounded and keeps me sane. Yeah. I wonder though, because banter culture is a problem. Like you brought it about just there. Yeah. And I wonder, it's given free rein for people to just be mean to each other.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know what, Colin? I don't think that's healthy.
No, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because then you get quite quickly into that whole horrible quagmire of comedy and what's okay and what's offensive, and which I really have no interest in going into, if you know what I mean. So boring. But like, I say it's so boring, but it is a conversation to have. I just feel like people talk about it all the time.
I feel that again with that sort of discussion, it always feels like tempers are too high when the discussion's being had.
Yeah.
Like if you could just sort of cool the temperature on it and actually talk about it. And this is actually true for everything, I think. If everyone just sort of calmed down a bit and like actually like, you know, spoke to each other like adults, it might be all right.
But then sometimes stuff doesn't actually happen till you have passion behind it, does it? I suppose is the other way of looking at that, maybe.
There's a middle ground, I feel. It's like, you know, when passions are so high, it can be so... Because you feel like at that point you're just talking past each other.
Yeah. And you're dismissing everything else about that person because of one thing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's not how you fix it. But I also understand what you're saying as well, which is that if you don't care about it, you can't defend your corner, you can't...
Yeah, if you're not passionate enough about it.
So it's tricky. That's not the answer to your question, though.
No. I don't think I've phrased the question very well, basically.
But I think actually what happened, your question was great. What happened there was that I started rambling.
No.
But did he... listeners, if you could have seen Colin's face when he said that.
What? When I went, no.
No.
But do you think, did you feel, for example, when I was being Ken and saying all that, does it feel like it gets to the point where it's just vicious? Like, I find it hard to find the line where...
See, that's tricky because we're talking about a very specific context here.
Yes, like, you know, it's not really normal.
If we were sort of, if we had a similar kind of relationship to that in real life, say,
yeah,
and like you were doing that in a pub or something, I'd probably have to take you aside and go, easy, come on, calm down.
Yeah,
you're getting a bit out of control. But obviously, in the context of what we were doing, which is where you are playing a clearly heightened character,
mm-hmm.
and when the cameras weren't rolling, we were chatting and, you know, becoming, I like to think, firm friends.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, at that point, the gap between Colin and Ken widened.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that when you were Ken, this wasn't Colin. This wasn't Colin saying these things.
It's funny, isn't it? I remember being, but like, I guess it's an autistic brain thing where I'm like, do people know that, though? Because that's... I know it sounds like I'm absolutely insane, but it's like, yeah, I remember doing Murder and Successful when I was being a character. I was being Ian McKellen, in fact, and I had all this makeup on, and the person I was doing it with, who was a celebrity, you know, not that they did anything wrong, but I won't say, just going on sound, you know, but I remember them just staring at me, like, really looking at me, like, in that kind of, like, what are you doing? Who are you? Do you know what I mean? As in, they didn't trust, I mean, I guess I had prosthetic makeup on, so they're probably a bit, but there was no, like, release of sort of like,
I think again,
so that, I just it, felt
it comes down to being performers, I think. Because when you say celebrity, I'm assuming they weren't like an actor or a comedian.
Oh, no, not really.
They, and like, it's a very different breed. I think if people like a normal,
yeah,
ended up like observing what happens on a set for a day, they'd come away thinking we were all mad.
Yeah. This is weird. What are you doing?
Yeah, it is such a weird, heightened, artificial environment being on a set.
Yeah.
And I think it does drive you to rack and ruin.
Do you ever have the instinct to push stuff to a point where it's not nice? So I tell you one quick, very quick story is where it really, my whole life changed in terms of this stuff is I was on holiday in Great Yarmouth with my wife and we played the donkey derby, you know, we got roll the balls.
Yeah.
And she went to the, what I'm saying, she was really good at it and won a prize. And then we went off, came back, she did it again and didn't do very well.
Right.
And I went, you didn't do very well that time, did you? In a voice which reminded her of a member of my family.
Right, okay.
She went, that's that person speaking, not you. That's that person. And she got really angry.
That is so interesting what she
said. And it was so like, I suddenly saw, you know, if I could write down all my reactions or behavior towards other people on a list, I saw this big chunk of them were from that person, from that place, and were mean spirited.
You know what but I
they were so it? Instinctively in me, they would just come out. Do you know what I mean? And I have literally spent the time since then trying to exercise them from my brain. But then it's weird because then I get to play Ken. It's like, you know, you're literally be worse, be more awful, you know.
If I may, your wife is brilliant.
She's really good, isn't she? I keep trying to get her on the podcast. She won't do it.
Because that, the way she phrased that
yeah,
was perfect. Because it was less sort of like an indictment of you and more making you aware of where that came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, the easy thing to do would be to say that wasn't very nice and I didn't like the way your tone. But instead, she allowed you to make that connection by saying that was that person.
Because so she's not bringing me down as a person. She's not like going, you're awful.
She's making you think about the way you act.
She's a really good wife.
Jeez, you hang on to her with both hands.
I do.
But that is such a good way of doing it because, like, if you say to someone, like, you know, oh, you're being a dick or whatever, like, there is a certain part of you, a certain instinct that will sort of balk against that and be sort of like, no, I wasn't. You're just being oversensitive or whatever.
Yeah.
But by tying it to where she thinks it came from, you were forced then to think about it.
Yeah.
And go, do you know what? That's exactly who that was. And that wasn't right. That wasn't fair.
Yeah.
That's incredible. She's come on the pod.
But Ethan, so I've got to go. I love this chat. We're going to have to leave the boardroom, but Barak.
Yes, who's this?
Is demanding some sort of answer. But the question that I have for you is where being, you consider yourself a nice person. Nice is quite a placid word, isn't it? But you consider yourself caring, not a vicious person.
Yeah, decent.
You don't try to use stuff, humor or whatever, to kind of like attack or anything like that.
I try not to.
No. Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. Do you try not to, or is it just instinctive? Did you just have a very lovely upbringing, a warm, you know what I mean, where that was that, is that part of your vocabulary to use that kind of viciousness?
I think there's a darkness within all of us. I think you can have the nicest upbringing in the world and still have dark thoughts and have thoughts that are mean and have thoughts that are uncomfortable. I think with the work that we do as comedians, as comedy men, we often have to skirt the boundaries of what's acceptable in order to find the funny. Like, you know, we, as is our job, we have to sort of be at the coalface. We have to, you know, we're right in it and exploring that. And I think you can't do that without then coming away with a certain part of the darkness in you. Mm-hmm. But I think, so yeah, like sometimes when something's happening, I'm scanning the room, I'm looking for opportunities to make a joke. And sometimes those jokes are nasty.
Mm-hmm.
What I've found more as I'm getting older is that I'm giving into that temptation less. And I'm more sort of thinking to myself, how can I make a joke which isn't like putting someone down?
Right.
Instead, how can I make a joke about a more broader topic or about the situation itself?
And has that come from a change in culture, do you think, or from a change in yourself?
I think this, for me, I think it's, I can only speak for myself. I don't know if other people are feeling this way. I've just found, honestly, Colin, as I get older, I've just got less time for drama.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, I feel these days, I've got no patience for it.
Yeah.
I'd just much rather have fun with my friends.
Yeah.
Than sort of have to have all these issues and everything like that. And, maybe that's selfish. Maybe I'm just sort
when
of like,
you're younger, you are a bit like at war with the world and you're kind of like...
Yeah, and you're pushing and everything like that. But so I'm at a point now where I'm just thinking to myself, do you know what, let's just have a laugh.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Have a laugh, mate.
Let's have some fun.
Come on. Tell your face.
But, like, this goes back to what we were talking about in the central bit, where we were talking about being recognised and, like, you know, how you react to that.
Yeah.
And I'd like for you... This is your homework.
Okay.
Next time it happens, I'd like for you to interrogate that feeling and think to yourself, instead of how am I acting, what am I doing, am I doing this wrong, try and frame it in a way where you're thinking to yourself, this is going to be this person's anecdote for a couple of weeks. How do we make it good? Let's give them a good experience.
Instinctively don't think about that, you know.
And that's it. And
that's great.
I don't know if it's wrong of me to say, you should try this.
I'm going to have to kick you out of this boardroom, old friend, because we have chatted for too long. Well, we haven't chatted too long. We've chatted for the required amount. But the problem is the day carries on, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That's the problem.
It does. There's not enough
time. Please. That's a really good... I really like that ending. That's a really good way to look at it.
I think if
everyone fucking did that, the world would be a better place, wouldn't it? If literally everyone just thought, whatever I do or say right now, this person's going to then carry away with them.
Yeah, this is going to be their anecdote. Make it a good one.
Yeah. Lovely. Thanks, Ethan. And see you soon. The boat?
Yeah, the so boat Horrible Histories on CBBC and Boat Story on BBC iPlayer. You can find them both. They're great. I mean, they're also very different.
I haven't seen Boat Story yet, but I'm very excited to watch that. I've seen Horrible Histories before. It's wonderful. It's
very violent. Boat Story, I mean.
I'm very excited about it. Very excited about it.
I hope you enjoy it.
Take care, pal.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely to see ya. See you soon. Keep in touch, man. Bye. Sort your brain out, mate. Well, there we go. That was lovely Ethan Lawrence there. What a kind soul he is, and a dear friend. Really sarcastic and insincere, and but that is, we'll talk about that next time. I meant it. Thank you to all our Patreons who've been Patreoning me. And a few of them have been listening to our extra bits. We put on an extra chat from our Nick Helm chat, and there'll be an extra chat from the bit with Ethan coming out as well. So basically, if you become a Patreon, you can support the show and keep it going, but also you can get some extra bits from the episodes. God, I've gone light into super nerd, haven't I? You can get some extra bits on the episodes. I am aware that I don't put much on the Patreon because it's hard enough doing the podcast, but I'm trying to get a system working so you do get more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, everyone who's been helping. It's all gone towards shed paint. Good old fashioned shed paint.
It's very nice, actually. I can see it through the Zoom. It's lovely.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's lovely. I've got a casting wall just waiting for a casting. That's the only... I've got the wall, but not the casting. So what I want to say to you right now. Oh, yes. So for the end, here is a little bit called I Can't Cope.
I can't cope.
So in this section, I'm just going to give you a little tip for when you can't cope. So obviously, I really couldn't cope out there wandering around Birmingham. Have you been to Birmingham, Dan?
Oh, I have. It's a very long time ago. I think acting took me there as well. I was doing some kind of, I think it was We did, oh, it might have been a bit of Shakespeare, actually. Yes, it was. It
Back was. To the Bosom of the Bard.
Yes.
It's funny old place. I really like it, but it is like a big shopping centre is most of the centre. It's like Mega City 1 from Judge Dredd. You got all the sort of, do you know what I mean? The sort of crossing motorway type
roads,
walkways and all stuff like that. But anyway, it's pretty cool. And I liked walking around there. I bought some new books and stuff and that was nice. But there's just so many fucking people. And you just like, you know, that there's a bit in that T.S. Eliot poem where he says, he's looking over the bridge and he says something like, I did not know death had done so many. Do you remember that line? But it's all about just swarms of people. God, I sound like I'm talking like Suella Braverman. I don't mean in that way. What I mean is just as an autistic-y person, you're just sort of like, oh my God, there's so many people. And they're all going in shops. They've all got shopping bags and they're all like, you know, and there's so much kind of Mega City 1 type sort of plastic stuff everywhere. And do you know what I mean? It's like, and noise and everything. Anyway, my tip is find a little place that you can call home when you're on your own in an unfamiliar place. And I thought, I'm going to do a big walk because walking is always good. Get your steps in and all that. And I did a big walk and I found a remarkable place called the Custard Factory, which I assume used to be a custard factory. I haven't done any research, but I'm guessing it used to be a custard factory. And since it's been, I mean, possibly local people see it as like horribly gentrified sort of area. I don't know, because, you know, it's very cool and very expensive, but it's basically loads of lovely murals, graffiti, very cool stuff. Looks amazing. And it's like an old industrial place, which is no longer an industrial place. They've turned into like cafes and little shops. There was a place which just did VR, which I didn't, I thought about trying, but I thought possibly, I'm literally looking around going, what will make me feel okay? What will make me, you know, like having a complete like Dalek attack. And I ended up going in this lovely cafe, sitting there for a while. And, but then there's a board game cafe. You'd love it, Dan.
Oh, well, yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Arcade cafe, which is cocktails where you go and just play on arcade games as long as you want.
All in the Custard Factory. This is,
yeah. Well, it's sort of outdoors. It's like if you imagine like the Custard Factory. Yeah, it's like offices with an empty bit in the center.
Yeah,
and then there's like these kind of stall/shops, and then very cool art shops, bars, a laser quest, and a cinema where I watched The Iron Claw. And I just felt very like this is my people. This is my place. I felt that a little bit when I went to Comic Con, which is weirdly quite stressful because I actually find a lot of Comic Cons quite boring because they're not actually that. You get there and it's like, there's not really anything to do. Do you know what I mean? It's just people walking around dressed as Darth Vader and stuff. But even though there was loads of people there, it did feel a bit like, oh, these people are safe. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I know. The Custard Factory, yeah. It's sort of got a bit like the Northern Quarter in Manchester. I keep meaning to talk about this on the show. Is like, I studied in Manchester and I went back there the other day and I went in this place called Affleck's Palace where they similarly kind of sell Star Wars figures and sort of weird T-shirts and, you know, stuff that, tie-dye things and that kind of stuff. And I just suddenly remember being there all the time when I was a student, especially after I got mugged, which I guess was a really traumatic, even though it wasn't violent. It was, anyway, I'll talk about that another time, but just having this place where I could go, do you know what I mean? I just used to sort of hide there.
Well, we've got a little place in Gravesend.
Yeah.
Mug and Meeple. Here we are. I'm plugging that now.
Yeah.
And yes, yeah, little game shop. Yeah, yeah. It's not very big.
Just to sort of like, oh, I'm okay here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a very safe place.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't want to put that in inverted commas safe place. It's, you literally feel.
Yeah, no, it is actually safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Safe and people from all walks of life come in and there's a lovely little community there. And yeah, you could just walk in from the street and.
I guess it's to do with judgment, is it? And stuff like that. And sort of like when you're in that, when you go into a spiral, you can really feel like I genuinely get like everyone's looking at me, everyone like no one wants to talk. Do you know what's really weird as well? I got into that spiral and all that. And then I end up going to the cinema and this woman who worked there was really friendly and chatty to me. And she was like, can I just ask, are you an actor? And she was like, oh yeah, the guy from the cafe ran in and went, that actor's here, you know, the guy from blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that, it sounds like being arrogant, but it was like the opposite of what I was thinking. Do you know what I mean? Like in my head, I'm like, everyone, I don't know why I got into this state. Like everyone thinks I'm really weird and stuff, but actually like that, or at least those two people were going, oh, it's that guy, you know. And they were like, oh, yeah, we love your stuff. Do you know what? So it was literally the opposite of what I was thinking. It's quite incredible. Oh, my God.
Lovely.
And then the thing is, when I come out of these states, and I'm like, and like the thing where I got into a bit of a state with someone on over text messages, and then Kat sort of straightened me out and made me realize I was being a bit mad. And then you go, oh, no, I'm just, do you know what I mean? You go, how do I deal with life ever? How am I even, how have I managed to get up when all this is going? Do you know what I mean? When I can get things so wrong or so like.
Yeah, but it, like you're recognizing that, like you've got that perspective more and more now.
Yes.
Whereas before it could have just been a bit more confusion and.
Oh, it would have been days. I mean, when I wrote Carnival Monsters that you're in, that was, and you remember Steve Evans who was in it, involved in it, and he was kind of a quite a big part in putting the show together initially and all that. And I think me and him found each other because we were both quite lost souls, you know, out of work actors, just wandering around Crouch End, Woolworths. We spent loads of time at Woolworths.
That sounds less cool than the Custard Factory, slightly.
Yeah, it was a lot less cool than the Custard Factory. But that show was me, I think. Now I look back on it, you know, I actually found it. And do you remember, like, the weird priest and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Thought he knew God. And that was a weird scene we did, wasn't it, and all that. And there was another bit. I was just thinking, the guy, just all those characters, they were all... I think in a way it was me like trying to understand my own depression and just sense of disconnection. Do you know what I mean? And on some level, I was also just making funny characters and all that. And it was, but when I reread it, you know, 10 years later.
It's like hiding in a bush, isn't it?
Oh, there's a man, who's literally sat in a bush and just like watching the world. But the idea with him, he was like a top businessman, but he just spends the whole day like in a bush. And it's like the best day of his life because he just sees the world. It sees all the things that go by, but he doesn't, I guess he doesn't have to connect to it, or he's removed so he can enjoy it. Very weird, but good. Lovely. Well, thank you, Dan. And thanks everyone for listening. Come back soon. Now we're going to make some sweet music together, aren't we, buddy?
We sure are.
Oh, yeah. All right, pal. Thank you. Bye, everyone. See you next time.
See ya.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.